European champions Manchester City have fallen in the Champions League, the latest victims of the Hollywood-style monster that is Real Madrid, that relentless entity you can never quite finish off. So, no double treble for Manchester City then, but a league and cup double for Pep and company very much on the cards. But Chelsea have held them to draws home and away this season. Can the West London side make it a horrible week for the Light Blues by beating them in this weekend's FA Cup semi-finals? I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. Squad rotation vitally important at this time of the season. Big Bad Boise is back. Alex Boyes from betting.betfair.com on the panel for this one. Boise, Chelsea have actually played really well against City in the league this season. They smashed Everton 6-0 on Monday. Admittedly, Everton were trash. But Cole Palmer having an amazing campaign.
He's having an amazing, amazing campaign. I mean, what a story this is. And let's just start by saying he's, for me, and this isn't a hot take, but he's a guarantee to go to the Euros now. I think he has to absolutely go.
Yeah, he should do.
Which is really exciting, to be honest, as an England fan, because it's the way he sort of composes himself. He doesn't look bothered at all, does he? Like, he plays almost in slow motion a little bit. Like, if you compare him to Phil Foden, who plays so like sort of like fast-paced and he's so good at carrying the ball, you know, the way he progresses the ball so quickly, Foden, and everything's sort of, even though it's still really brilliant, it's a little bit quick and fast-paced, where Cole Palmer looks like he's just playing at his pace and no one else has come and got to sort of join in with him. So, I mean, what a four-goal haul that was on Monday night. And to be sat top of the Golden Boot charts alongside Haaland with a handful of games left is pretty remarkable. I mean, City must be really regretting selling him for 50 million quid.
But would he have played? That's the question. I think the thing at Chelsea is that he's the main man. He's become the really central figure. Almost everything now with Chelsea goes through him. At City, he might have been the odd man out. He might have got, say, 15 starts or something like that. He wouldn't have been able to make that same impact, would he?
No, he probably wouldn't have done. That's fair. But I suppose the argument you would throw at City and Pep is like, what was it that made you... Like, there's been some games this season where like they've started Doku on the right, who's clearly a left-winger, just like Grealish. They're just trying to get both in the team. And they sold Mahrez as well, let's not forget, on the right-hand side. And now Bernardo's kind of played that right-hand side role more than anyone else, but there must be a little bit of an ounce of regret there for someone like Cole Palmer to be doing how he's doing somewhere else. But just looking at some of his other numbers, Kev, obviously we mentioned he's top of the Golden Boot chart with Haaland. He's got 29 goals and assists as well. You know, that's the same as Ollie Watkins. No one can better him on that. He has scored 9 out of 9 penalties. Now, you might not always get 9 pens in a season, so that's obviously elevated him to the top of the charts. But so what? He's sticking them all away, right? And if you look at the averages, he averages 0.87 goals per 90, which again is top of the tree alongside Alexander Isak. You know, he's actually started fewer games and played fewer minutes in the Premier League than Erling Haaland as well. You know, despite being on the same number of goals, he's the outright leader on 1.26 expected goals and expected assists per 90 in the Premier League. So he's posting some high averages as well. And one thing that I sort of noticed, which was obviously born out of what happened on Monday night, was if he of the top Premier League scorers, only Haaland and Salah are averaging more shots per 90 than Palmer. And then, quite interestingly, if you start moving down the list from top to bottom, you have to go get down to Douglas Luiz, sorry, who's on 9 goals for the player who's shooting from distance as much as Palmer is. You know, there are a handful of players whose average shot distance is further out than Palmer, but none of those are near the top of the scoring charts.
Yeah.
So my point from a betting point of view is that we can potentially find some juicy prices on Palmer from outside the box. And if we look back on Monday night just quickly, there was some well, they are superb odds on that. I was going to call them sickening odds on that on the Betfair Sportsbook because I was so jealous that I wasn't on any of them. You know, one Betfair punter alone won over $5,000 on various Palmer specials. We haven't quite priced them up yet, but he was 125-1 to score twice from outside the box. He was 150-1 to have two or more shots on target from outside the box and a headed shot on target. And he was 200-1 for him to score a header and from outside the box. And remarkably, they all landed by the 29th minute. because that's when he completed his hat
Yes, he
trick,
got
and
his
that was
hat
the
trick,
second one from outside the box. Now, look, the header aspect elevates them quite a lot, and that we're not going to expect that. And it was a tapping header rather than a towering back post number nine header. But you know, you will be able to bet on Palmer to have one and two shots from outside the box at Wembley, and that's something that I'm tempted to look at. But and you'll get juicy prices because his goal scorer price opened at 100 to 30. And I just think the fact that he's on penalties, and considering Chelsea wins so many, you know, there are six or seven players priced shorter than him to score this weekend in that game. And even though we're not expecting Palmer to sort of stay toe-to-toe with someone like Haaland, who's 8 to 11 to score at Wembley, you've got De Bruyne, Grealish, Doku, Bob, Foden, Alvarez, all priced up shorter than him to score. Now, I get why. We understand why, because of City's dominance, the way they play and the underlying numbers and so on and so forth. But maybe with the market's still not fully catching up with what this guy can do in front of goal. The fact that he's on 20 Premier League goals, I am just not having him at 130 to score a goal. So I think it's well worth just playing this one simple. You know, he's Chelsea haven't been beaten by City this season, as you said. He scored in the game at Stamford Bridge, and that was a penalty as well, I think, wasn't it? So, well worth a look, in my opinion. And the only other thing I wanted to mention on this game was around Conor Gallagher, Kev. So, on Monday night, he was 4-1 to win three fouls against Everton. And yes, I said win, not commit, win. I know he commits a lot as well.
So, that to be fouled three times.
To be fouled three times was 4-1. Now, that was in by about half an hour. He actually finished the game with eight fouls won. And he also committed three himself. So 11 foul involvements, if you like. And I just think it's worth mentioning to keep your eyes peeled on those prices again for this one. You know, City, that high-pressing team, give us the ball back. And Gallagher, you know, I actually think he actually might suit the way City play in that number eight role. If, you know, the way like they have Kovacic and Mateus Nunes. I think Gallagher would be, like, for me, like, he's a guarantee to go to the Euros as well. I think Southgate, he does so many parts
of
the
game
so well.
He's an energy guy, isn't
well.
He? And he kind of... Yeah, and what was interesting on Monday as well, because Enzo was not available because of injury, he ended up playing in that kind of pivot, didn't he, really, with Caicedo, and he really got stuck in that role, and that kind of seemed to suit him, really. They looked more... I like Enzo a lot, and I'd expect him to get back in the team pretty quickly, but I actually thought they looked quite good, Caicedo and Gallagher together, and it weirdly brought... I mean, again, it's Everton, but it brought the best out of Caicedo as well, I thought.
I just think, even looking ahead to the summer, like Southgate, thinking about the balance of the team, and he might not get a start, but again, for me, he's definitely going to be on the plane. And if it's, no matter the game state for an England game this summer, I think Gallagher is a worthy sub, whether you need to get a goal, protect the ball, win the ball back, cause issues. So, but just quick on his foul one numbers, he in his two games against City this season, he's won and conceded two fouls in each of those games. But his most recent fouls one numbers, you go from the Monday night game, which was 8, and then 3-1-0-2-0-1-6-3-1-2-2. So his foul prices are too short, but to be fouled. It might be a nice secret way to profit from Gallagher at the minute. And as I say, the 4-1 that he won three the other night, which was his top line, I'd like to back the same line again this weekend.
Sky Sports' Lewis Jones also in the house. Lewis, that outrageous argument over the penalties on Monday as Nicholas Jackson and Noni Madueke tried to take the spot kick off Palmer. I'd have taken them off immediately. They were miles up in the game. I'd have given them a hook straight away. But it does show with Chelsea, even though there have been green shoots of recovery recently, it's a very immature team in general, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what you get with early stages of a club going through sort of a transition, isn't it, really, in terms of trying to rebuild the club through signing these exciting youngsters and trying to gel them all together. I mean, yeah, you're right. It was ridiculous for that to happen on Monday night, and yeah, it would have been a naughty step job for me if I saw my son doing that. So it was a I'm a little bit torn here, because obviously Man City will be fully pumped to try and keep their sort of quest for the double now alive after what happened last night. And I didn't really see too much wrong with their performance, actually. When you look at the metrics behind the game against Madrid, I mean, they created 2.7 expected goals, 33
it's
shots.
Real Madrid.
They
That's
did
what
get Real Madrid
in the Champions League.
And hopefully some people took my advice on that Real Madrid qualifier price that was put up on the Monday. So, yeah, no, they throw logic all out the window. I think we mentioned this. And they just have this indescribable way of staying in matches when there probably should be conceded goals. And they take their chances when they come. So, yeah, it's an amazing... It's just a special football club in that competition. So, but yeah, again, I'm torn on this game. So I always feel the FA Cup is where... City's bid for multiple trophies is the most likely to falter rather than the Champions League. But now that's sort of been equaled out a little bit. But this semi-final always comes bang in the middle of like a hectic period of Champions League and Premier League matches where every game is just so intense. And boy, was Wednesday's game intense. It was a real heavyweight clash, and they're going to be mentally and physically drained, I think, going to Wembley on Saturday. It was a bit of a tight turnaround as well, isn't it? And those Champions League quarterfinals maybe explain why City's actually overall record in FA Cup semi-finals is actually quite poor under Pep Guardiola. So they've played six semi-finals under Guardiola, only won two and have lost four. So and those two wins came against Sheffield United when the Blades were in the Championship, and against Brighton when they were managed, if you remember, by Chris Hughton back in the day. And the spine of that, the Brighton team that day was Shane Duffy, Dale Stevens and Glenn Murray. So not exactly the Brighton that we know and love today under what they've done under Graham Potter and De Zerbi. So, and I did think the stars aligned from last season for that treble bid, just because they drew Sheffield United in the semi-final, who they beat 3-0, and they were able to sort of rotate and rest and get through that match in a pretty comfortable fashion when usually... they do struggle. So, and I don't think they'll be able to get away with that here, actually, against a very dangerous Chelsea team who have been actually steadily backed on the exchange over the past sort of 48 hours to win the game. So they were 7.2 48 hours ago and are now 5.8, with City at 1.63 to win in 90 minutes. So no doubt the sort of the City fatigue or hangover factor from the Champions League game is probably affecting the market here. And I do think Chelsea are onto something pretty good under Pochettino now, actually. I think they've settled into a nice rhythm towards the back end of this season. And they're unbeaten in 12 games across all competitions, if you include the Carabao Cup final, which they drew in 90 minutes against Liverpool. And I know they got a lot of stick that day, didn't they, for the way they sort of froze when Liverpool chucked the kids on and Gary Neville's famous bottle job comment. But I thought, actually, for the large parts of that final, they were the better side. And actually, Kelleher kept Liverpool in that game with some really big saves at big moments. So I'm expecting them to turn up in similar vein here at Wembley. And they've scored 26 goals in their last eight games as well. And that's averaging three goals a game. And then they've scored at least twice in all of those matches. So it's definitely a front line who are firing. And you've got to give credit, actually, where it's due to the Chelsea hierarchy for signing the likes of Palmer and Malo Gusto, who I know I've raved about before on the podcast. They got them both for sort of a combined, I think it was maybe 70 million. And it looks
spent a billion on the rest.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll give it a faint praise indeed. Maybe.
What a bargain. Where's all your money? Oh, we burnt it over here.
And I suppose
those individuals are bargains. There's no doubt about it. But it was a bit scattergun, if we're honest.
I mean, look, Mudryk for 80 million still has big question marks, doesn't he? I mean, he's looked a little bit brighter in recent weeks. But I do think if they can get Nkunku fit next season, I think he's a really top quality player. And if they can get another centre back in and maybe a better goalkeeper, unless Petrovic continues maybe to develop, he looks a little bit flappy for me still. He's very good.
He looked terrible on Monday. How can he look bad as a goalkeeper in a 6-0 defeat?
Yeah, true. Is he good with his feet? I'm not even sure he's good even with his feet and passing, okay. Really. Not a great shot stopper. I think there's better goalkeepers out there on the continent. I mean, even the Brighton goalkeeper and the Brentford goalkeeper, I think they're both better than him. So maybe Chelsea will go back to Brighton to sign a Bruggen maybe in the summer again. So that'd be their usual
turn
style.
Up in goal or something like that for Chelsea. He's the only one they haven't brought in yet.
Yeah, it's very true, yeah. I don't think they're too far away from being a contender next season, maybe for the top four. I think a little bit more improvement should see them sort of mix it with Spurs and Villa and maybe close the gap on those on the top three. So as you can probably sense, I am going to fade Man City in this match. And I suppose if a theory isn't broke, don't fix it and keep backing it. And that's my feeling about the sort of City's vulnerability to counterattacks, which I mentioned on the Champions League podcast. which Real Madrid managed to get in and score from again, which was probably the decisive moment in the match early on. So Chelsea have scored 5 goals against City in their 2 games this season, and they've utilised those quick sort of transitions and fast breaks really well. So I think they'll be confident of getting in behind that City high line, especially if Pep makes changes across the back line as well. And I think Real Madrid, again, showed City's weaknesses pretty well under those 2 legs. So yeah, I think if you fancy Chelsea here, which I'm coming round to, I think you're getting some sort of fantastic prices to play at on with Betfair, as the market is so skewed towards Man City. So Chelsea with a +1 start on the Asian handicap at 1.9 leapt off the page to me when just scouring the markets this morning. So we'll only lose our full stake if Man City win by 2 or more goals. And I just don't think they'll have the energy or the maybe even the will to go and really put on a show and thrash Chelsea. So if they get 1 ahead, it might just be just get this job done and move on. So we get our stakes returned if City win by 1 goal, and we get paid out in full if Chelsea win or draw. So that looks quite good to me. And if you're looking to play some bigger prices as well, I think the likelihood of Chelsea scoring in the game is pretty high. And as Boise's mentioned there, I think look no further than Palmer at 100-30 any time. That looked big to me this morning. And sometimes the very obvious bets, which that is, are the best bets. So 100-30 for a player who scored, was it 11 in his last 7, I think? So, yeah, he'll be on my radar. And if Enzo is back for Chelsea, I know you mentioned him, you like him in that central midfield spot, it might push Gallagher further forward as well. And he's 7-1 to score any time. And when he's played in that position off the striker in that sort of like wrecking ball position in the sort of the number 8, he's scored 5 in his last 10 starts, so 7-1 looks quite big there. And also we've got to have a look at this Gusto assist price again when Betfair released the assist markets, because I'll be expecting to see something maybe north of 8-1, maybe 10-1 if he's been priced up in his usual fashion against these sort of teams. So if you'd backed him to grab an assist in his last 11 starts, you'd have won 4 times. So he's got 4 assists in his last 8 starts. And at those sort of prices, you're making a very healthy sort of level stakes profit following that. So still think that's a definite runner. And he's created 2.2 chances per 90 in his last 17 starts. So and I've explained before how Chelsea like to set their attacks down that right-hand side with Palmer and Gusto. He does see a lot of the ball. So I do think you'll get a good run for your money when the prices come out for Gusto to get an assist. But yeah, no, I'm happy to play Chelsea here on the Asian handicap with +1 start at 1.9.
The good thing about that +1, you talk about City not being able to thrash Chelsea is, you know, he who must not be named, one of our close friends and Manchester City fan, who texted our group chat 10 minutes into the, was it 10 or 15 minutes into the game last night, saying Haaland has gone. So that's the City sort of people unravelling because he missed 2 headers. And even after the game, he felt to double down on the fact that Haaland is, basically City fans have lost their minds. So I'm just trying
to
back you up.
He's got 30 odd goals still in all competitions.
That's why it's funny, Kev.
Unbelievable.
He's gone. He's a fraud.
Yes, rubbish. Send him back to Norway. Terrible. We know injury time goals, whether they're scored by Erling Haaland or not, can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets. And they've got 90-minute payout to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+, begambleaware.org. Arsenal were also knocked out of the Champions League on Wednesday. Premier League, best league in the world, remember, as they continue their push for that Premier League title as they visit Wolves. Lewis, this actually feels like a really big psychological test for Arsenal, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was a really, really bad night, I thought, in Munich. I did think it was a big moment for that team, actually, to try and show that they can react and play on these big occasions. And they turned in another performance, which I was expecting, actually, which was very similar to the ones they did against Porto. I thought they were quite cautious again, nervy, tame. Yeah.
And they went Bayern's best performance, to be fair. It's the best I've seen Bayern play under Tuchel.
I think Arsenal played into their hands, though, to a certain extent as well. So I think they made Bayern maybe look... Bayern were in their element, I thought, and Arsenal just played into their hands. And Yeah, I finally made some money on my Arsenal big game mentality theory, thankfully, hooray and all that, because yeah,
We got there.
buying to qualify finally got me back in the green on taking on Arsenal in these games. And I just thought it was really I only watched the last 10 minutes of that game, and 'cause I was watching the City game, but the last minute of the game summed it up for me, as they had Arsenal won a free kick about 25 yards out, and they had a chance to sort of flood the box with Gabriel and Saliba. They're so good from set pieces. They're probably what, best team in Europe from set pieces, when you look at the numbers. But Ben White decided to play a quick free kick into Saka in the box, and he was hounded out by about four Bayern Munich players, and ball went behind for a corner. So I thought, all right, fine, fair enough, one last chance. And up went the keeper, up went the centre backs again, but their last action in this year's Champions League was for Saka to hit the first man with the corner. I mean, it just summed it all up. It was so poor, and it just epitomised the issues they have, I think, on the big stage, and they're just unable to step up in the big moments. And I do think the bigger the game at the moment, the worse they play. So I just want to reference a tweet from the club as well last night after the game. It says a Champions League journey to be proud of. And I was just thinking, what is it? Am I on the Maidstone Twitter feed here or something? Is this what's going on? I mean, they only beat Sevilla, PSV, and Lens, and had to rely on penalties to beat a bad Porto side, and then got knocked out when they were expected to beat Bayern. So, yeah, no, I don't think it's something to really take much positivity from. I know they can say they can learn and they'll build, blah, blah, blah. But I just think this is a team that's rated very highly by the markets, almost equal to Man City, and the markets are a really good sort of gauge of how good a team are, and the prices they've been going off at are akin to sort of Man City. So I think the expectation should have been them to at least make the semi-finals, really. And I understand they're a young team and they're developing, learning, and all that. But when these big opportunities come around, you've got to take them, because there's no guarantees they'll come around again. I mean, things can change so quickly in football, and Arsenal do look quite secure and consistent in what they're trying to build. But I do think when the chance comes, you just have to try and take it. And I just think they were just a bit sort of defensive and didn't really attack the game as much as they should. And yeah, they fired another blank, didn't they, in Munich. And I'm just wondering, maybe they can they stop off in Dubai on the way to Birmingham on
Might
Saturday,
have
maybe
to.
just to recharge
Might have
again.
to.
Seemed to work well last time, didn't it? So yeah, they just seem to be struggling to score in these sort of big games. So in matches against the current top four or a Champions League knockout match this season, Arsenal have just scored 8 goals in 11 matches. So again, it just is there something to do with Arteta's maybe too defensive-minded football, and they need to maybe unleash more hell on teams maybe and take more risk? I'm not sure,
It's
but
control, though, isn't it? He loves control. He doesn't. He's very much like Guardiola in that regard. He doesn't want to take that handbrake off. He wants to kind of. I mean, the Porto game was a great example at the Dragão. They were so timid. It was all so slow, so laborious. It was all based on can we nick something from a set play? You look at the teams that actually do well in this competition. They don't play like that, really.
No, exactly. But the thing is, he's trying to copy and paste what Guardiola has done to a certain extent. But Guardiola's team can hit you from sort of different angles, I think. They can score different types of goals. Arsenal, I just feel if you can nullify Saka coming in off that right and Martinelli coming in off the left, I do think they're actually quite a, I wouldn't say an easy team to defend against, but they're very predictable in what they can do, and you can actually stifle them. And the fact the goal scoring blank last night as well, it's meant the Bayer centre forward merchants have crawled out of the woodwork again, haven't they? I mean, is that going to really fix the issue? It wasn't like Arsenal were missing chances in these sort of big games, have they? Created 0.42 expected goals in the first leg against Porto, 0.9 in the second leg, only one expected goal against Bayern in the first leg, and then 0.47 yesterday, which I thought was, I mean, that's a horrendous number when had quite a lot of time to go and chase the game as well still, and they had really created nothing towards the end of the game. So if you magically put even Ivan Toney or someone in that team last night, would they have won the game? Don't think so. I think it's more to do with the style of play and how they're trying to create chances. So yeah, they've got to pick themselves up very quickly, haven't they, with the Wednesday Saturday turnaround. Can't afford any more slip ups in the running. That's just the reality. They need to win every game. I don't think Man City are going to be slipping up now, especially now they're out of the Champions League. I mean, this gives that was I think that's really bad news for Arsenal that Man City got knocked out, actually. And I'm surprised Man City's price on the exchange to win the Premier League actually stayed at 1.47 yesterday, because I'd argue that City's task to win the Premier League has now come a bit easier without having to have the sort of the two-legged set Champions League semi-final. So,
yeah, I
do think it's really. I mean, I'd be shocked now if Man City don't go on and win this Premier League title. And that title race that we all were looking forward to is sort of crumbling all around us, isn't it? Unfortunately, but I do think this is a really fiddly fixture for Arsenal at Molineux under the lights as well. The 7:30 kickoff, I don't think helps matters. It's Gary O'Neill's building a sort of an impressive body of work for himself at Wolves, isn't he? And he's do like his team when they can sit back and relinquish possession in a match. They've got a really good record against teams that when they can sit off and play on the counter-attack and soak up pressure. So, yeah, in 16 games across all competitions this season where Wolves have had 47% or less of the ball, so the possession stat, they've won 8 of those 16 games, drew 5 and lost just 3. So that's including beating Spurs home and away, beating Chelsea home and away, and also they beat Man City at home earlier this season, didn't they? So it's I'd be worried if I was Arsenal going to this game. I think it's going to be a very fiddly game for them to try and break that Wolves backline down. But the problem is, for anyone tempted to lay Arsenal, it's hard to see Wolves scoring against this sort of majestic defence that they have built. And that's one thing that Arteta is focusing on, isn't he, in his matches. If you can't score against us, we only need one or two to win games. And I do see that a quite likely outcome here in this matchup. And yeah, Arsenal's XG against per game average this season still is absolutely sensational. 0.72. And it's just it's a phenomenal number. It's the best by some distance in the Premier League. So yeah, and I've gone around the houses here a bit in terms of a bet, but the one that keeps looking at me again is the under goal line here at the three goals or less on the Asian line on the exchange, again around sort of 1.90. Confidence is sort of slowly returning for unders bettors. I think for me especially anyway, I found a couple of winners last few weeks where Burnley and Bournemouth and Burnley versus Brighton, we managed to nail a couple of winners on the unders line. So I'm more positive now on moving in when the price looks right. And I think this is a good price here for the under three line at 1.9. So the only way we can lose money if four or more goals are scored in the game. Three gets us our money back and we win if there's two or fewer. So, yeah, so we get a lot of good correct scores on our side here, don't we? The Arsenal win to nil in a low-scoring win is on our side. Any low-scoring draws, and if Wolves are to nick it and take advantage of Arsenal's sort of fragile mental state, 1-0, maybe 2-1, we're covered there as well. So, yeah, I'll be playing the under goal line here.
Boise, which way would you go with this one?
Yeah, I won't talk too much about Arsenal because Lewis has kind of done a nice job there. My sort of angle for this game is something that I've been trying to profit from the last few weeks on Wolves is Ryan Aitnuri. And Lewis knows all about this because I did text him one day about that. and the day that
and I texted, Lewis did pour cold water on that theory as well. So just to add that in.
You did. You were waiting for lineups. And I think it was the day I was at Leeds' game with Coventry, and he had two shots in the first half. Did it?
He's managed to get a Leeds mention in there. I was wondering how long it would take.
I think there might be another one coming as well, to be honest, Kev. So
yes,
just watch this space.
That's good. I'm on the over 1.5 line for the Leeds mention, so that's great. Hopefully that cops.
Basically, right, I really hope this guy is fit. I'm absolutely loving him. Since it's sort of his newish role, but is a sort of a left winger. And I don't just mean a sort of flying left wing back. There's been games recently where he's played, Gary O'Neill's played a back four, like Hugo Bueno's played at left back, and Aitnuri's been on the left hand side of the midfield. And then against West Ham, which is when he picked up his knock, he was essentially part of the front three, was Aitnuri, sort of in behind the striker in the two sort of role. So it's not just a case of him being asked to sort of get further up the pitch in his current role, he's actually been sort of switched around. Before that West Ham game a couple of weeks ago, where he did play in that advanced role, he'd scored 3 goals in 4 in all competitions, and that was sort of a similar number to his previous 100 games at the club. And he managed 7 shots on target in those games, at least one in each match, and 12 attempts in total. He then missed an absolute sitter at Villa Park, I don't know if you remember, with the goal absolutely gaping. To sort of extend that goal in run. But again, he was like inside the 6-yard box from a cross that came in from the right-hand side. So, but luckily, I don't want to back him to score. I just want to back him to shoot. And obviously, against Arsenal, the sort of issue is, as Lewis said, they don't give up a lot of shots. They don't give up a lot of chances. So that's why we'll probably get some bigger prices than we ever have on Aitnuri. To just to have some shots. Now, against both West Ham and Forest, obviously he didn't play the Forest game because he was actually left out of the squad through injury, so that's a slight concern. But he was 17 to 10 for a shot on target in both of those games, which I've mentioned he did in four in a row up until that West Ham game. And I keep mentioning that West Ham game because I had him to have three shots, a shot in each half.
It's clearly traumatic for you.
and a shot on target. And at half time, he'd had two shots. And I was like, well, if he has one shot in the second half and it hits the target, that cops all three of the angles. And he limped off about 5 minutes into the second half. So I'm left wanting Kev. I don't know what was going to happen. So I need
unfinished business.
I need to see him play a 90-minute game so I can either dispel this narrative or continue on it. That day he was 4-1 for three shots in the game, 11-4-ish for a shot in each half, and as I've mentioned, 17-10 just to hit the target. So. O'Neill said he would travel to Forest, so I was on, as I said, I was on it again at the same prices, but he wasn't even on the squad, so at least I didn't lose my money there. But so the risk here that he's injured, but with it being Arsenal, we're going to get some bigger prices, and they're not fully priced up yet, but I did speak to the traders for some sort of rough guides. And we're looking at around 15-8 for a shot on target, 9-4 for a couple of shots, and as big as 9-1 for three shots. And I just think if he continues in this new role, those sort of prices just to have some shots, I don't think they'll last too much longer. It's a bit like Joe Gomez at Liverpool. He used to be able to get odds against just for him to have a shot, but ever since he's been thrown in at left back this season, he has a shot a game, and those prices are all sort of cut now. So we're not quite there on 8 Nori. So I'm praying that this is the game he starts, and with it being Arsenal, we can profit some big prices.
Don't tell the traders what you're going to do. You know what they're like. They'll slash it before you even know where you are. If you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Massive game in the relegation battle. Luton take on Brentford. Boise, how are you going to work Leeds United into this one?
It just sort of pours out naturally, as the Leeds mentioned. So, you never know. It might just rear its head when something comes up. It's constantly on my mind, Kev. We've discussed off-air about the magnitude of Leeds' game on Monday, and
of course,
I won't repeat how I feel. So let's just park Leeds United for now. It'll be me who bring it back up anyway. So, this game is a really interesting one. Whenever I look through fixtures, especially for this podcast, I always first look to see if there's a really good set-piece team against a really rubbish one. I think the old boys would have sworn there, Kev, so I hope you can see the growth in me.
Yeah, you're getting there. It's maturity. It's like Chelsea. You see some of these young players developing. It's exactly the same.
Oh, I don't want to be as bad as like Madueke Jackson. I don't want to be lumped in with those.
No. You've moved away from there. You've moved away from that zone. Don't you worry.
The reason that I obviously just to look at those is because just to see if we can back defenders to score at big prices. And the last time I was on the pods, I was very close. And Lewis is about to chime in here because he actually won from not from just solely what I was tipping up, but because he had the same sort of mindset on Fulham set pieces at Old Trafford. But I was really bigging them up in that game, and I put up Tosin to score, and Lewis very, very astutely backed Tosin and the other centre-back, which was Calvin Bassey, to score. And who opened the scoring from a corner? Of course, it was Calvin Bassey. I think 66-1 winner, I believe, Lewis. I think you had that day. So,
this is probably the first time I've actually called the right centre-back to score. On my gravestone, it'll be, here lies Lewis Jones, always back to the wrong centre-back to score. It's the story of my life, that. So I'm glad my fortune had an effect on your misfortune, boys. If you could let me know which centre-back you're backing this weekend, that'd be great.
On the point of that, though, just for listeners and viewers, actually, if they're thinking of this kind of thing, if they're looking at a game and you guys or something they've read on betting.betfair.com kind of indicates that there's a mismatch and you've got a team that's got a good chance of scoring a goal from a set piece, should you just always split your stakes and back both centre-backs, or how should you do it? Because presumably there's always a chance of one of the two.
Yeah,
out on one.
My personal opinion is I think that's absolutely fine to split your stakes. You don't feel like you have to double down on staking the exact same on both. Make sure you sort of gamble responsibly, of course. But obviously you're sort of looking for that that defender that jumps off the page in terms of their shooting, and that's not always the case. There's not always an obvious one. For example, like when England play, Harry Maguire is always sort of the target man from set pieces.
Sure.
And like, I'd probably always favour backing him over like John Stones if they both start. But it's absolutely fine to split stakes, and I will be doing that since I got burnt that day at Old Trafford. I was so conflicted in my emotions that day, both for Lewis as a successful punter and also at myself, feeling like I'd done my work, then just not finish off my dinner. So
that Wario thing, isn't it? I've won, but at what cost? Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I suppose there's a Leeds mention. That's a bit like when our creative players create something for Patrick Bamford and he just seems to put it over the bar again. You know, they don't quite finish it off when it's there on the table.
He's a very well-spoken chap, though, isn't he? So, you know,
well,
it's not
he
all
is.
Bad.
It's not all bad. Needs to do a bit less speaking, to be honest. Anyway, no.
Lewis,
no,
we won
there.
The over 4.5 mentions.
All I need now is for the bet bill. I just need Lucas Radamy to get a mention and the bet bill
has
been completed. Yeah,
there we go. Yeah.
Brentford, right. Set piece XG, second only to Everton. Set piece shots, second only to Liverpool. The sort of conversion rate is a worry from set pieces, sort of in the bottom half in the Premier League. But if you actually extend it to sort of any shots from dead ball situations, which include throw-ins, goal kicks, free kicks, only Liverpool are taking more attempts than Brentford. And then if we look at Luton, by the way, on that sort of dead ball stat, that's from FB Ref, and how funny is it to see Man United have conceded the outright most number of shots from combined dead ball situations, 102, which is obviously one more than Sheffield United. So it will never not be funny, and it will always get a mention when I'm on this
yes,
pod.
Indeed.
But yeah, as per the Opta analyst for set piece shots conceded, Luton, one of three sides to concede 150 shots or more, along with Man United and Sheffield United. And only Burnley and Forest have conceded more set piece goals than Luton's 15. So it's time for those sort of big centre-back shouts again. Looking at Brentford's team, last week, Christopher Ayer was a surprise omission. He also picked up a knock, and they actually went to four at the back, which sort of deviates away from the Thomas Frank's trusted three CBs that he's pretty much routinely known for. But they did get the first win since the dawn of time. So,
yes.
And they got a clean sheet. So it's hard for me to say, as sort of a non-Brentford expert, you know, whether they'll do that again. But Luton only play with Carlton Morris up top because of Ali Adebayo's injury. So I could see Thomas Frank sticking with a back four. So there's some prices here for the two centre-backs who played last week and Ayer, because I think if he's fit, he's their best defender. So Zanka and Collins are both 9-1 to score or 20-1 to score first, and they both started last week. Pinnock is 10-25-1 and Ayer is 11-1 and 30-1 to score first. So wait for lineups. And then I'm going to back the two centre-backs at big prices. And I'll sort of put like 3/4 of a stake on any time and then 1/4 on to score first. So it's going to be 4 bets across 2 players, essentially. And just remember, in the reverse fixture, back in, I think it was in September or something, Ben Mee scored a header from a corner and he also had 3 shots. So I'm not going to be too put off by the sort of rubbish shot numbers that Brentford defenders have. It's all anti-Luton that gives us a chance here, I think.
That's an interesting point, Lewis, actually, just before we move on, because my gut instinct is always with first goal scorer bets, because you've mentioned them quite a lot since you've started coming onto the show, first goal scorer bets. My instinct's always been, but what happens, you know, something, as soon as something happens and a goal goes in, your bet's dead. But is that the sensible way to do it then? If your theory is, right, this player's going to score, or there's a good chance that a set piece is going to be scored from, do you put a kind of a chunk of your stake on first goal scorer and the rest on any time? Is that how you'd approach it? Or
I think it's twofold, really. It's sort of price dependent, or I would say. It's obviously the first thing you should always have in your mind about whether the price you're getting is above what maybe you make it in terms of your the probabilities and your own sort of markup on what that price should be. And then the second one is probably the goal expectancy as well in the game. I always try to find if the goal expectancy is high in a game, that puts me off the first goal scorer price, and I'd rather just take the any time. But if the say, for example, Everton are playing, their goal expectancy obviously very low, I would be happy then to back the two centre backs, Tarkowski and Branthwaite, to score first, and take that risk rather than just back them any time. So yeah, no, it, yeah. It's, for me, it's all price dependent, really, and the goal expectancy. Those are two things that I really would factor into my decision making when looking at the centre backs. And I do love it. I do love backing the centre backs to score. I had some really good touches over the years with centre backs. So it's always a it's always an area I'm always looking to exploit. So yeah, and I do like actually Boise shout there. Zanka, I think. I mean, we mentioned him last week with his foul count, but he's also a big threat in the box for Brentford from set pieces, and he's had. I think I've just got the data here. He's had 5 shots in his last 4 games. I think he scored at Villa as well. So yeah, no, he would be.
That was an hilarious finish. Could you picture the Zanka goal at Villa where he sort of went, he sort of sliced it with one foot. I think he hit the other and like completely wrong footed Martinez. It was fantastic. You'd love to profit from a goal like that.
Yeah, they all count though, Boise. This is the beauty of the game, isn't it? So yeah, no, I would I'd be on that Zanka score price. I think he's more of a threat than Collins, so that means Collins going to score now, isn't it?
Of course. Now it's time for the world famous podcast treble, a feature so revered that the reason Mark O'Hare's not here is that he's skiving, listening to old episodes just to hear himself. Give selections to the podcast treble. How does this work? Well, each of the three of us comes up with a selection ahead of the weekend's action, and our lovely traders wrap it up for you in a boosted treble. I will start, not the most exciting price, I admit, but I do really fancy this. I fancy FC Köln to beat Darmstadt in the Bundesliga this weekend. Darmstadt are terrible. They're on the brink of relegation. Köln won their last home game against Borkum, admittedly needed a couple of late goals to actually turn that one around, but I think the atmosphere is going to be terrific in the Cathedral City. I actually thought they played quite well against Bayern, even though they lost 2-0 last weekend. And I think under Timo Schulz in general, they have started to really improve, and I think the likes of Stefan Tigges and Luka Waldschmidt scoring recently will only boost their confidence levels, and I think it'll be a tight one, but I think Köln can actually come through and win that game against the Bundesliga's bottom side. Boise, what have you got for us?
I'm gonna go with the Conor Gallagher 2+1.
Lovely. And Lewis, take us home.
I'm going to go to Sunday, if that's okay. I'm sure we'll go into more depth on this bet on the Sunday pod. So do head over and listen there. It's Palace to score over 1.5 goals versus West Ham. So Palace to score 2 or more goals, really, in that game. Even money, which I thought was big, considering Eze and Elise are now back fit and firing.
All that to come in the Sunday show. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, lots of good preview content on our website, betting.betfair.com, not just with the Premier League, but with European leagues as well. From Lewis, from Boise, and from me, it's goodbye for now.